welcome to another edition of the Lyricord Early Music and Classical Show. I'm Nick Fritsch, here with my co-host Jeffrey Dooley. And what you are hearing right now is called Parlamento. It is from the Visconti manuscripts of Estampes, performed by Fred Rentz and New York's Ensemble for Early Music. And today's excursion is going to be all about keyboards throughout history. We could call it quills and hammers. We could call it plucked and hammered. We were just trying to figure out what to call it. But we're just going to take a little sampling of keyboards throughout history of various kinds and talk about their origins and how they got to be what they are. In any case, first of all, let me say hello to Jeffrey.
Hello, Nick. It's great to be back again.
Yeah, good to have you back. So, what we're hearing now is rather early 13th, 14th century piece, we think. And it includes several pre-keyboard instruments. You might say instruments that later evolved into keyboards. The hammered dulcimer, the harp, the psaltery, and the the lute, of course, stayed the lute.
Yes.
So this is sort of a good starting place. Let's listen to a little more of this Parlamento, and then we'll talk some more.
Okay.
That was Parlamento from the first Estampida album by New York's Ensemble for Early Music. And it's kind of an interesting place to start because it features hammered dulcimer, which is a zither-like instrument, which you hit with hammers, obviously. You hold in your fingers. Mm-hmm. And the psaltery is a box-like instrument that you pluck. And both of those actions, of course, later became the harpsichord and the piano.
It evolved toward the harpsichord. The psaltery is usually played with a feather quill, which is sort of shows you that's why the harpsichord quills are called quills,
right?
Because originally they were made of the quills of a crow's feather. So, and the psaltery is usually associated with a single line, because
right,
before chords were played regularly. Mm-hmm. So it's a melodic instrument. Metal strung, wire strung,
mm-hmm,
and it usually plays a melodic line, and then there's usually a bowed instrument sustaining a drone.
Right.
In most of this music.
When did keyboards first begin? I mean, when were all these things applied to a keyboard?
Well, the organ existed even in Roman times.
Uh-huh.
So it was called the hydrolus, and it was it was powered by water pressure, and it had rods. That stuck out, and they were called organ beaters.
Wow.
Because you had to press very hard. So it wasn't a real keyboard, it was rods. But eventually the keyboard evolved in the medieval times, very early, rather primitive plucked instruments with a keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
if your listeners could envision some of the beautiful medieval illustrations in churches, mm-hmm. usually around Saint Cecilia or the Virgin Mary, mm-hmm. these medieval angels playing these instruments, mm-hmm. and you'll see a viol, which is the violin-like instrument, and people plucking the psaltery,
right,
and the recorder, and they're usually associated with loud and soft instruments, and the psalteries and the recorder are called the soft instruments, mm-hmm. as opposed to the wind instruments like the shawm and the trombone or sackbuts are
right.
called the loud instruments. So all the plucked instruments tend to be more intimate. But if one can envision these beautiful paintings, I can in my mind see some of these wonderful paintings like the Giotto frescoes showing these instruments being played.
Well, let's see. We could move up a little bit into the Renaissance when the plucked keyboard, the harpsichord, had really taken hold, and also yes. the virginal.
And the harp was very important at that time.
Right.
More important than people realize today. So many performances of later music don't include the harp, mm-hmm. but it was very much a continual player in the 17th century and was a solo instrument, too. The harpists at court were very revered, and they went from court to court. And then it evolved into a continual instrument. So when we think of the Baroque as being the ubiquitous harpsichord, there was also the harp and the organ.
Mm-hmm.
Chamber organ or portative.
Why don't we hear a little bit of the music, keyboard music of John Bull, who lived from 1563 to 1628, an Englishman, a composer who's still revered today, and who wrote a lot of keyboard music.
Yes, and he was a rebel. Mm-hmm. He was a Catholic and right. was very individualistic for his time. His music is very, very unusual.
All right, let's listen to the Bonnie Peg of Ramsey, and then we'll talk a little more. Bonnie Peg o' Ramsey by John Bull, performed by Catherine Coke. And Jeffrey, you know Catherine very well. You used
indeed.
To perform with her and have recorded with her.
Yes. And she's playing a virginal.
Mm-hmm.
And the virginal is a little different from the harpsichord. It's a plucked string instrument, but it plucks the strings. The strings are at right angles to the keyboards. In other words, a harpsichord, the strings are from the keyboard to the end.
Mm-hmm.
But the virginal, the strings are strung across, so you play at right angles.
Right.
And this affects the tone. And some of the virginals had the keyboard to the left, mm-hmm. which creates quite a different sound because the keyboard rods that have the jacks at the end are plucking toward the end of the strings, which gives a brighter harpsichord-like sound. But the musillar, which is an instrument where the keyboard is in the middle, so it's plucking at the middle of the strings, which is what Catherine is playing on. And you can hear that distinctive, almost drum-like sound
right.
of the bass line because strings are being plucked in the middle.
Right.
So it gives a distinctive sound.
Where they're more flexible.
They're more flexible. Mm-hmm. And it also affects the writing, too, because if there's a very fast-moving bass line, sometimes it's difficult on the virginal.
Uh-huh.
But it's a wonderful sound. It's sort of grunting. They used to call it the pig instrument because it sounds like a pig grunting.
Right.
The grunting virginal.
Right.
I love that concept.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of another virginal, virginal musillar,
performed on by Elaine Comparoni playing some John Dowland.
So she's playing the Muesler, which is the keyboard being, the keys being up in the middle, the jacks plucking
right.
in the
now,
middle.
Are they both playing the Muesler?
I think so, yeah, because I recognize that drum-like bass
right.
sound.
Well, let's listen to Pavana Lacrimae by John Dowland, performed on the virginal Muesler by Elaine Comparoni. And
probably the most famous piece in all of English history,
right.
made into the song Flow My Tears, which
right.
came separately.
Thank you. John Dowland's famous Pavana Lacrime in an arrangement by William Byrd, performed by Elaine Combroni on the Virginal Muselaar from her album Passionate Pavans and Galliards. You know, that sound of the Virginal Muselaar, I think in some ways that was only sort of revived in electronic music. It's a very distinct sound, and the only thing I can relate it to is certain synthesized keyboard sounds that were developed in the 80s. But it's really like no other sound I've ever heard.
Yes, it's a unique sound, and it's associated with different points of view. For example, it's called the Virginal. One reason it's called the Virginal is that it's named after Elizabeth, who was the Virgin Queen, and she was known for her ability to play the Virginal. Then it's also named because it's considered an instrument that a very pure person, a pure lady, would play, a virgin.
Right.
So there are different references to it. Nobody knows for sure why it's called virginal, and the fact that it's said in the plural is interesting. Virginals.
Right.
So virginals usually means an instrument that has, it's called the mother and child virginal, which has a separate instrument of 2-foot pitch, and it's next to the main keyboard, and you take it off, so the mother and child, that's the child, the little keyboard, and you take the child out, and you put it above the main keyboard, and you can then play both of them together.
I see.
And so two people could play it if you wanted to.
Oh, I see.
So the mother and child virginals are the ones that have the main keyboard and then a separate instrument next to it. And it was used throughout all of Europe. And the piece itself, the Lacrime Pavane, became, probably anyone who knows about Dowland's music, the first song they would think of is Flow My Tears. So he literally created the tune that so many composers wrote variations on. Even Rameau wrote variations on Flow My Tears, and it became the Lacrime Pavane.
Right.
Now, I'm not sure about this, but some of your listeners may know this. I don't know whether Dowland composed it first as a song, and then it became a pavane, or it was the other way around, because many of his songs were instrumental first.
Right.
And then he set the text to this. But this is so compelling that I have a feeling that it was a vocal work first.
Right.
And it went everywhere. It went through Italy. It was in Germany. Even Caccini. Giulio Caccini set a variation on it, Flow My Tears. So it's probably the most famous of all the Dowland songs, and there's an arrangement in the Seven Tears of John Dowland for gambas. There's a whole set of variations on the Lacrime Pavane. It's called the Seven Tears. It's seven variations for four viols on the same tune. The word pavane, which we associate with the French because it's a French word, when it's in Elizabethan English, the English anglicized all foreign words because they were culturally secure. So the pavane was called the pavane, and the chaconne was called a chaconne.
Oh.
Spelled the French way, C-H-O-C-O-N-N-E, chaconne. Put it in English, and it's chaconne, and it's spelled C-H-A-C-O-N-N-Y.
Right.
So pavane is spelled in English P-A-V-A-N, and it's pronounced pavan. Pavan.
All right. Well, I'll make a note of that. Well, that's a lovely instrument, the Virginal Muselaar.
Yes, it is.
Really extraordinary.
And it's wonderful to play. It feels wonderful because you can really feel the pluck of the string, because the fact that the keyboard rods are plucking the string in the middle, you really have to press, and you can feel the quill release because it's reaching into the middle of the string. So you really feel like you're playing it. You feel the depression of the key and then the release.
Now, is it a louder instrument or a softer instrument?
It can be very loud. It can be quite loud. Byrd wrote a whole suite. I can't remember what it's called, but it has a movement called the battle. And it's the sound of a battle. It's an early program piece. And it has on it these little hooks that vibrate on the string.
Wow.
And in a battle scene, in order to reproduce the sound of drums beating and the bagpipes droning, it makes a buzzing sound as the string is played, and then it disappears. So it goes buzzing like that. And it's usually used as a drone in his battle piece.
Oh.
And it was equipped with it. It was like little hooks.
Yeah.
That were on a bar, and you'd move them, and they would be just above the string. And when you plucked the string vibration would touch the hooks.
Uh-huh.
And it would make a buzzing sound, like a drum.
Is that the forerunner for the chain on the piano in the brothel?
I suppose it's similar to that, yes.
Right.
It's creating, and then when you get into the forte pianos, mm-hmm. The early forte pianos, not even that early, had all sorts of different stop controls on
uh-huh.
them. There was one called the Turkish music.
Oh, yes, right.
Which was a bar that came down and had leather, and it would vibrate. So the keyboard, the harpsichords, and the virginals had all these different sounds that you could create.
Cool.
Leather quills as opposed to crow quill to
right.
give different sounds.
Well, let's take a break, and then we can come back and play some more, okay?
Very good.
Listen to what critics are saying about Dr. Bull's Jewel, the keyboard music of John Bull, performed on harpsichord and virginal by Catherine Koch. James Mannheim of the All Music Guide. John Bull may have met his musical match in the American-Dutch harpsichordist Catherine Koch. Francis Knight's 2009 Oxford Music Journal. The interpretation of each piece thought afresh and served by a superlative technique. Gary Higginson, Music Web International. A very fine disc. It offers a wise and fascinating choice of pieces. Beautifully prepared, researched, and played. Music by John Bull in the first rank of early English composers. The 2009 Penguin Guide to Recorded Classical Music, an aptly named collection, for Catherine Koch really does make a jewel out of Bull's piece of that name. This is a very attractive collection indeed, and the recording of the harpsichord is remarkably clear and present. Enjoy the music of John Bull on download or CD at www.lyricord.com.
Jeffrey Dooley, you've had a long, extensive career as a countertenor. I understand you give master classes, too.
Yes, I do, and probably my favorite way of teaching is working with singers in Baroque interpretation and also how to improvise cadenzas. And I also teach English pronunciation for foreign students and business people, both in classroom settings and for private students as well. And I also lecture and serve on panels, that kind of thing.
Well, how do people get in touch with you?
Well, they can reach me through my manager, Melody Bunting International is the name of the organization, 155 West 72nd Street, room 604, New York, New York, 10023. And the website is www.melodybunting.com.
And the phone number?
212-799-4949.
Do you have an email address?
JeffreyMDooley@gmail.com.
I'm back here talking with Jeffrey Dooley on the Lyricord Early and Classical Music Podcast. Let's hear some more. Let's move on to a little early English harpsichord. Again, back to Catherine Koch performing some John Bull, and we'll talk afterwards.
Thank you.
as In Nomine by John Bull, performed by the extraordinary keyboardist Catherine Koch on her copy of a 17th century Rucker's instrument. And we were talking about the sound is very different on earlier harpsichords than what a lot of people are familiar with.
Yes, it's a little more straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little brighter in sound, and there's a similarity to the virginal. An untrained listener might not know the difference.
Right.
And this business about the In Nomine is something that it's interesting to know about. It's a line of chant from John Taverner's, the line, the Gloria Tibi Trinitatis.
Uh-huh.
And it's just these long held notes.
Uh-huh.
And the In Nomine became used in, it became the name of a piece, an In Nomine, for four vials. And the least accomplished player, because gambas were played in a family, mm-hmm. family of instruments, usually at home for home music.
Right.
So the least accomplished player could play the In Nomine notes because he would hold each note.
Uh-huh.
And the other parts were played and written around it.
Uh-huh.
So In Nomine became a form that all the composers who wrote for the concert of viols
mm-hmm.
Would have this In Nomine played by someone who may be very good or someone who was just learning to play the viol, could hold these notes all the way through. And as we just heard, you really can't hear where the In Nomine is. It's, mm-hmm. it's buried in the counterpoint.
Right.
But if you had the score in front of you, you could follow along
yeah. mm-hmm.
where the In Nomine is.
Right.
And it became a form that for variation, like the Lacrimae Pavane was a form for variation.
Mm-hmm.
So the In Nomine it's interesting that one particular movement of one particular 15th century Mass by John Taverner.
Wow.
Why was that chosen as a source for variation? I've always wondered myself.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say an In Nomine, most people will know, what does that mean? Well, it means in the name of God, right? Mm-hmm. In Nomine Domini.
Right.
So it's the same five or six note chant around which improvisation is done, or written out polyphony is written around it. There are harpsichord pieces, viol pieces, even organ pieces,
mm-hmm.
In Nomines.
I see. How interesting.
Yes.
Well, actually, what we might do now, speaking of In Nomine, is go to a different In Nomine by John Bull, but performed on a very different instrument. And this gets back to an earlier show when we were talking about the difference between early 20th century revival harpsichords,
yes.
which were not historically informed, or particularly historically informed, but were more the product of mass production and taste of the time.
And the taste of the time, because at that time the harpsichord was trying to get be revived by people.
Mm-hmm.
So the players, builders, felt they had to create a lot more sounds
right.
to convince the listener, and Landowska is certainly famous for that.
Right.
And many people dismiss the harpsichord, the revival harpsichord, but to me that shows a lack of respect for the movement. Because
mm-hmm.
without it, we wouldn't have the wonderful situation we're in today.
Right.
With copies of harpsichords that are expressive, exciting
uh-huh.
on their own because they're copies of instruments of the time. I think people felt that, oh, if we play those old instruments, they're going to sound weak. And
right.
But of course, they didn't. But you know, they were selling the instrument.
Sure. And
to piano players and piano listeners.
It was also part of mass production. And, you know, we know how to do we know how to manufacture things now in the 20th century.
Yes, we're
better. Nobody else did.
Yes.
But it's all pretty cool stuff. I mean,
it is.
It has
its place.
Yep.
And it should not be rejected. You don't have to like it, but
mm-hmm.
you must understand what it is.
Right.
And that's true of everything. You
mm-hmm.
don't have to like things, but
right.
you have to understand where it fit
mm-hmm.
and what influence it had.
Right. Paul Wolff was a protege of Landowska, and he's here performing on his own playl. And it's kind of an unusual album because I don't think at that time too many keyboardists were delving into early Renaissance English keyboard mm. music.
Well, Paul, he's an unusually interesting musician
mm-hmm.
in his playing in the Handel, which I think we've done a little
right.
bit for its time. You would think it might be now because
yeah.
he allows the jacks to finish the chords at the end. He's just more aware, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's early, it's 50s, I think, isn't it?
Late 50s.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's listen to him playing another In Nomine by John Bull.
another In Nomine by John Bull, performed by Paul Wolfe, and that is from our When They Had Petals, Volume 1, in which he plays Frescobaldi and a lot of English early keyboard works. That's quite a piece, which I think very well demonstrates what you were saying before about the In Nomine.
Yes, you can hear that. You can hear it in the right hand,
mm-hmm.
as a sustained perfect example.
Right.
The other one is far more polyphonic.
Right.
And the theme is sort of buried in the polyphony.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a little bit more direct.
Right.
And the instrument is terrific.
Yeah, well, that's the 1907 striped zebra wood plail that Paul played, which is actually a pre-Landowska plail. So they were making these harpsichords in the factory even before she gave them her specifications.
Mm-hmm.
There's another early English piece on this album, which is rather short, but a beautiful piece by Richard Edwards. I don't know the year. It's When Griping Grief the Heart, from Romeo and Juliet, the text.
Oh, yes, yes.
So I thought we might just quickly
hear
that.
It's a song, too. I've actually mm-hmm. sung it many times with lute.
Right.
But it's early. It's quite early.
Right. So let's give that a listen, and then we'll talk more. Griping Grief's the Heart. Well, Jeffrey, I think we're going to pick this up again next time for Volume 2 of Keyboards in History. And thank you for being with us today.
Very good. And we'll be covering other instruments. We'll talk about the Lautenwerk, the forte piano, and other instruments, too.
Right. And we'll be seeing you next time.
Very good.
Program copyright 2009 Lyricord Discs. All rights reserved. Hammered and Plucked continues on part 2 of the Lyricord Early and Classical podcast about the history of the keyboard. Nick and Jeffrey discuss the development of the plucked keyboard instruments into the Baroque era. Examples from John Paul's set of works by French Baroque gallant composer Jacques Dufli.
And interesting about Dufli, he is one of the first composers who was completely freelance. He taught and made his living as a freelance musician, which was very unusual at the time.
Uh-huh. Performances of Scarlatti by Elaine Thornburg and Elaine Comperoni and J.S. Bach performed on the gut-string Lautenwerk are highlights of this episode. Don't miss the next Lyricord Early and Classical Show podcast.